Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
VoiceOver Coffee Shop, episode 38.
Welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we share our morning with some of the finest names in voiceover. And now, here's your host, voice actor Andrew Morrison.
Hi there, my name is Andrew Morrison, and welcome to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop, where we start our day with some of the finest names in voiceover. If you'd like to get to know a little bit more about me, check out my website at www.andrewdmorrison.com. In this episode, we have a very good friend of mine and the producer of my animation demo, Travis Mullinex. Travis is an extremely well-rounded voice actor. He's also an audio engineer and a demo producer, and he's worked on productions such as Black Clover, One Piece, Dr. Stone, Attack on Titan, and even the dubbing of a Godzilla movie. In this episode, we're going to go over how he got into the world of ADR, what his thought process is when he's making an animation demo, and the perspective of networking in voiceover. How are you doing today, buddy?
I'm not doing too bad. Just another overcast day over here in Texas, and glad to be in October. I love October.
Absolutely, man. So how do you take your coffee in the morning?
I find my tastes have become a lot more simplistic in that way. I'm not much of a sweet tooth kind of guy, so I like to have my coffee with maybe just a couple of drops of cream and actually no sugar. So I'm really kind of developed a good taste for the bitterness and the sweetness of a good coffee is the way to go. I'm also a big tea person, so I have a thousand different kinds of teas at this place. That's also kind of my morning coffee fix.
Do you drink tea before you record?
I do sometimes. I don't necessarily find that caffeine-based teas are good. I've made that issue of drinking a coffee before a session, and then I just feel like I'm moving 1,000 miles a minute. But I am a big fan of like herbal mint teas, things that kind of heal the daily damages that you might have from talking too much. And I especially like it when there's just those days you go, especially here in Texas, the allergy problems are quite intense. So drinking that before a session, just warming up the vocal cords and healing some of the damage makes you, when you enter that thing, just ready to go.
Oh, absolutely. I use Throat Coat with local honey for that exact purpose.
Ooh, you and I used to drink Throat Coat, but it was definitely a practice in drinking things you don't enjoy. I do not like the taste
really?
Of Throat Coat.
Oh, I yeah, love it.
I think it's the flavor, but also that the coat aspect that kind of throws me off, that filminess that you get. I don't know. It just
see I like that because it makes me feel a little more hydrated almost, I want to say, like you just drink a gallon of water, because especially in long form narration, it helps you get in from that that scratchiness after recording for like 30 to 45 minutes.
I know that I'm probably not the best person to ask for like good techniques when it comes to pregame for sessions, because I've, you know, a lot of people are very much on, you know, it's good to have a green apple during a session because it helps with semblance and spittiness and things like that. Mm-hmm. It's good to drink these certain things and not these things before your session. But I've made that mistake sometimes that between studio sessions, I remember this one, it was recording for two different shows. And I was like, well, I got time to eat lunch. I've had nothing to eat. So I went to this burger joint and they had hot sauce on the table. And I was like, well, I like spicy food. Coated everything in it, took a bite, and I realized, oh, this is ghost pepper sauce. This is way stronger. But I didn't want to say no to it. Like, well, I don't want to waste food. So I finished it, but my face was burning and I had a session in like 10 minutes. So it was very interesting. I was definitely able to handle maybe the first hour, but then after that it was painful. Everything was just dealing with all that drainage and stuff, it's not a good time.
Oh, I bet. So how did you get wrapped up into this whole voiceover thing? I mean, you do VO, you produce demos. What's kind of your super VO origin story behind it
The
all?
genesis.
Right.
The thing is, like, I always was kind of an actor growing up. I enjoyed entertaining people. I just enjoyed overall performance. Watching a lot of these animated series as a kid growing up on Saturday morning cartoons, the Batman animated series, X-Men, things like that, it didn't really click with you at the time that there were people voicing behind those characters. And I remember, like, for the longest time, like, it just wasn't a career that was really well known. I learned about it. The first time I even learned about voiceover was a newspaper article that was highly inaccurate. Because, well, I guess not completely highly inaccurate, but maybe a little misleading, that specified make the wage of a doctor while in your underpants. And I was like, that sounds like an interesting career. And it was a whole article about voice acting. And it's like, you could do it from home and make six figures on it and things like that. I'm like, that sounds like the perfect job for me. I mean, who would ignore like a promise like that? So I started doing more research into it. And back then, there wasn't a whole lot of information outside the occasional book you can find. And from that point, I just kind of found little ways to enter into this weird industry. A lot of it was early on, kind of banging my head against walls, just to try to find the right path. I walked into studios a lot of times and asked if they're holding auditions, which in this line is not necessarily the best way of going about it, but back then you didn't know. So like my first very anime audition was walking into a studio saying, "Hey, do you do anime here? Can I be on your audition roster?" Cool. If you're listening to this and you're thinking about doing that, do not do that. It was the wrong way of doing it. But like ever since then, like after doing it and realizing how much it enriches my life, I just became a nerd for it. I became passionate about learning as much as I could about it and learning about the processes and training what I could in that time. So I've been at this since 2007. So now that we're ending 2021 later, getting close to 2022, I've been doing this a while and I love doing it. It's one of the most fulfilling experiences of my life.
So you mentioned anime specifically. Did you start with ADR or?
I did.
Okay.
Obviously, the interesting way of going around it. I would say I started with ADR as the way to go because, well, I did a little announcing before that. I actually was my fir one of my first gigs ever was announcing a beauty pageant,
Oh, wow.
Which is technically I recorded it in advance, but it was one of those experiences where I went, wow, this is really cool. Then I started taking college courses and announcing and things like that and getting used to using my voice in that way. And the teacher there, I guess, did work for Funimation, and was like, he's this Australian guy, worked on a couple of shows like Samurai Seven and things like that. And
Okay.
he just ended up saying, "Hey, you know that Funimation," that my Australian accent is terrible, by the way. "Oh, by the way, the Funimation's like 5 minutes away from this college." So I went bug-eyed and went, "I'm gonna drive down there." And my dad's old-fashioned work ethic pumped in my brain is, "You ask for the job that you want." So I
Right.
went in there and asked for it, and oddly enough, got involved in that world a little bit early on, but I wasn't
Okay.
ready. That was little training and was just I was running 100% on passion at that point. But back then also, I didn't know where to go to learn how to get better at the craft. So I started searching for internet groups and things like that of people that work on that sort of thing and would be able to discuss it. And I found internet forums that were devoted to people that are interested in voice acting and things like that, and would sometimes host projects or just shoot around questions and show the things that they're working on. And I just started like working with this internet community to learn about the basically moving from it just being an interesting hobby idea to really wanting to do it as a career. After that kind of fell through eventually, though, that was about the point that like classes started becoming more available, that the job actually seemed like a real thing. So from that point, I had a good hold on it, but I would say a definite origin story is just finding a big group of very interested other voice actors wanting to do the same thing. So when they create a community, a lot of those voice actors have moved on to do great things. So it's really interesting in this current generation of voiceover people, especially in character work, that I can look and go, hey, I remember you from 2007 on this internet forum. Right. But that's kind of how I got into that.
So what were they teaching you in that announcery class? Like, was it on stability, on projection? Like, what were some of the fundamentals that go into being an announcer voice?
So the announcer stuff was a lot about understanding copy breakdown. So okay. Looking over it and understanding, it was less focused on base level technique, and it was definitely more focused on what it means to be a working announcer and getting the idea of the kind of work that's involved with it and practicing those kind of particular work skills. When it came to like things like to be able to speak properly and things like that, I had vocal training beforehand. I had a lot of music teachers in school that were interested in trying to get me into singing, for example, because they found I just kind of had a natural gift for it. So they wanted me to train on that. I also had I have a condition called auditory processing disorder, which requires, it's basically like an auditorial form of dyslexia. So it required a lot of additional training to be able to learn about speaking well and being able to understand the fundamentals of language. And another big part of it was mimicry, being able to hear and gain insight into voices and what people are thinking based on that. And I honestly think because of that, I've had a lot of experience on knowing how to analyze people's voices, and it made me interested in impersonations. It got me interested in listening to people and getting a feel for their feelings behind it. And I think that's helped me a lot in my career, actually. Even if it's a detriment in most cases, I think in this kind of role works perfectly.
Gotcha. And so going back to the ADR side of it, you said you were running purely on passion. What was some training that you took afterwards other than the ADR training itself that kind of helped you more in the booth?
I took a couple of classes with some character voiceover people, Tony Oliver, David Fennoy, and they were the ones who kind of definitely was a sit down moment of reality of like, these are kind of for characterizations, need to find your direction in it. But I can say until recently, ADR practice wasn't necessarily things you had a lot of access to. A lot of ADR directors and actors are starting to host classes now, but back then it was, I wouldn't say it was a guarded secret, but there wasn't anyone really talking about it. A lot of my experience came from doing it. After working on enough independent games and independent animations and things like that, I built enough connections that eventually, after I got cast in this one video game that unfortunately never came out, it did lead to them just sending an email out of the blue saying, hey, we want to try to get you in for these bit roles for this show called One Piece. So I got brought in for that, and the director there, a man named Joel, was a very accommodating sort of person. It was definitely one of those experiences where I doubt that he would teach me from the ground up, but if he had a good sense of your performance, he was willing to sit there and explain to you what goes into dubbing and what goes into the process of ADR, how to be able to characterize in a short period of time, how to apply those ideas into limited and sometimes unusual lip flaps. So with his patience and honestly just the overall sense of joy to be able to have that opportunity to begin with, it's been some days you go in, especially early on, where things just don't work. You're trying things and things just aren't clicking. I remember my first case of Walla was awful, where they put four people in a room to record lines that aren't written down. You had to improv. And on top of the fact that I didn't know what to do, and my auditory processing disorder, it was a nightmare. I would just sit there quietly a lot of times because I couldn't think of anything to say. So it was like, it was banging your head against a wall until you find the right path. It was honestly learning via adversity. Nowadays though, there are a lot of people that host ADR classes where you can go in and do sample sessions and things like that, which is incredible. It gets a lot of these newer people already experienced in ADR even before they even have their first paid session. And I just think that's really cool. But yeah, back then it was a lot of making mistakes, sometimes taking 15 or so takes to get the right one, those sorts of things. Luckily, they were very patient with me.
Gotcha. So how did you get into the engineering side of it? Because I mean, you produced my character demo and you did a phenomenal job. Like
Thank you.
what got you into that side of voiceover, into the technical side?
There was a couple of things. When I was a part of that voiceover forum, a lot of it was people creating their own projects, audio dramas, and things like that. And I've always loved writing. I've always loved coming with creative worlds and things like that. So I wanted to do the same thing. So I started sending out basically project ideas of little original character things. Like I had like a sci-fi western that I worked on at one point,
Wow.
a rom-com involving ghosts. You know, I had all these little ideas running through my head. So I started writing scripts for them, started sending auditions out for them. They were nothing paid. They were just for fun for us to really kind of practice and try our craft at. And during the experience of just practicing on mix on those, I got a real good sense initially on the creative process of engineering, the building things from the ground up and taking all these little pieces to make a much greater whole. And when I did that, I really started gaining an admiration for it. So when I was in college, I kind of had a direction. Well, I know what I want to do. I love voiceover. I still love to be involved in voiceover to this day. So what if I had a career that aligned unilaterally with voiceover? You know, so I started working on the more the technical aspect of it. And then it just came down to eventually, I had started producing all these things and people really loved them, and getting that experience in school certainly helped. And then after that point, there was a big long break of me just working just to survive. So I didn't really dabble in much outside of passion projects. But then I started reaching out to these studios, showing them some of my old work. And once again, adversity through just trying things out. Being in that space and applying the creativity and the knowledge that I already had, I started picking up a lot of this engineering stuff, and it's been kind of snowballing from there. I've had the chance to do production for everything from video games to anime to all sorts of things like that. So I've had a chance to really dabble into professional level, high-end, high-demand projects that have forced me to grow in that aspect. And when it comes to demos, I generally enjoy the process of that. Because as I mentioned, I love building things from the ground up and at least telling stories and creative and things like that. So a demo works just like that. You just basically take all the little paint that comes from the voice, the sound effects, the environment, the writing, and try to make these cool little projects that highlight the best of what a voice actor can do. And as a voice actor myself, I can definitely appreciate when the quality of that is solid. I know what it sounds like when it needs to sound well, because that's what I would want in my demo. So I've applied a lot of those principles to the other side of that industry.
Gotcha. So what do you feel helps to make a demo stand out and become more competitive?
Well, there are a lot of different thoughts on this depending on who you ask. My opinion on a lot of that comes down to making your demo sound distinct. It's a way of they need it needs to sound marketable to the products you're trying to reach out for. And obviously it comes down to also to the performance level of the person recording it. But there needs to be aspects of it that make it stick out compared to the hundreds that most likely either the talent agency or the person trying to cast you can be able to stick out and go, oh, I remember that voice. And yeah, there's so many ways you can go about doing that. It could come down to what's written in the script. One of my biggest pet peeves in a lot of demos is that a lot of people write very vague scripts. My sense on a script is almost like you're changing the channel on a TV. You're flipping to different kind of networks. And if you flip to a network that's some they're talking about boring things, you're going to change it. But if the script is interesting, if it puts into some in the brief period of time some sort of perspective, even if you don't necessarily understand it at first, but it gets you interested, it makes you laugh, it makes you know pay attention to the words and things like that. That makes the person listen to it, pay attention to everything else about the demo itself, the acting and everything like that. It doesn't just sound. The thing I hate is the vagueness of like a line of like, "How dare you do this to me?" Well, what did they do, and to
Right.
whom? And then you'll hear a lot of demos that are like that, where it's like a you know, they have a scene where they want to show that they can cry, and it's just like they're gone. Where did they go? And then it's the most boring milquetoast thing you could possibly imagine. It's adding names to it and context. For one, it's pulls people in, but also I think for the actor, it's a lot easier for them to empathize with when the picture itself has some sketches already in place. You know what, you get a better sense of the scene, and then you can act better accordingly to it. Also, I find that sometimes demos can be too distracting. And what I mean by that is that the engineer finds that weird, there's a weird balance between too little mixing and too much in a demo. Because too little would be like they just added a song, they didn't really do anything to balance the audio and slap together and there's your demo. But then you also get the other side of it where they slam 1,000 sound effects in it. Like there's a war scene where the explosion almost overpowers the voice of the person coming through, and or they'll put a lot of processing in the voices to make them sound like a monster. There's a thin line there where you want to be able to have a high quality production mix. So there's no, so there's immersion in the actual listening to the demo, but the voice is the priority. So a big focus on that is mixing it just enough to where it's interesting, but, not too much to where it's distracting. And I think as long as you focus on those little things, you can really have that sweet spot in a demo that interests people. And so far I've heard a lot of people have had success for the ones that produced them in, which is always a point of pride for me.
Right.
You know, when I hear that it works out for them, so I'm glad it does. Obviously that has a lot to do with their own marketing, but I'm just always happy with that. I can help.
So speaking of marketing, how are you acquiring your voiceover jobs? Is it through direct marketing? Is it through being on those rosters that you've kind of built a name for yourself on? How are you booking?
A lot of my booking comes from my personal approach. A lot of it is to, one of the biggest ways you can always reach out to clients for that is if you manage to get on their audition lists, just audition. And it sounds like such a simple concept, but I think a lot of times, especially for newer actors or even ones that haven't been there a while, they can get intimidated by auditions, or at the very least, they'll see something go, none of this is good for me, I'm not going to try. But I have this thought process that even if I read a voice that says, need someone 40s, 50s, deep voice, gruff, clearly I'm not made for that, but I'll audition for it sometimes anyway. There's obviously like, I don't audition for every single thing, but if I feel I kind of want that role and I haven't auditioned for them before, I'll send them something. It might be radically different than what they request, which might help. Sometimes it has helped me get roles. But doing those auditions and showing them my range and showing them my energy and enthusiasm, I think that's just as important. Even if you know for a fact you're not going to get cast in this, you might get cast on something later. On top of that, there is that aspect of networking to a certain extent. And mainly it's networking just by being someone who's readily available, someone who approaches these projects humbly, or even just talks to people outside of the work in a very humble and normal way. I often make friends with people just by being around them and hanging out and things like that. And it has nothing to do with voice acting. And we might talk a little bit about it, but if I go out to someone and have some drinks or things like that, just have a good time, it can't help but think, that guy was nice to be around. Like, I want to try and see what he sounds like when I give him this role. It happens. I think networking without trying so hard to network is a trick to do it. I know some people that do the networking route where it's like they show up to social events with their business card and their website and start talking about every role they had. And I don't know if that always sets the best precedence with people. Maybe some people like it, I'm not sure. But I think the social interaction that come with voiceover are very important, especially if you can just be yourself, because this industry is all about selling who you are as a person. So if you can advertise, if you can show your personality, you can just show who you are as a real person and people like you, opportunities a lot of times come your way. So I mentioned my chance of being with Funimation for that time for recording for that show came a lot from me working with a client 10 years prior on a video game. And we had no affiliation outside of those little things. But 10 years later, she is a director at Funimation. And after doing that, she ended up telling me later, like, I wanted to bring you on like 4 years before this, but we're just trying to find the opportunity. But And it's not like I aimed to her to say, hey, give me work. But she just remembered me from the times we did work together and the times that we just talked and laughed and went, you know what, this would be a good guy to work with. And I like working with them. I want to bring them on. So advice, if you are one of those new kids out there, be friends with people that have similar interests in you, because you never know what career path they might go down. One day down the line, you'll never know. They might reach out to you and say, hey, do you want to record a Miyazaki movie? And at that right. point, you never know. I'm sure you know plenty of people that, you befriended, and then later down the line, it's like, oh, you work for them now? Wow.
Right. So what do you do outside of the booth? Like, I mean, we kind of get enveloped in our booths and just kind of stay in these padded rooms and we just want to work all the time. But like, what mm-hmm. do you do for fun outside of voiceover? What are things that you enjoy?
Especially at a certain point, you're so much of your life gets so generated towards your work that anytime mm-hmm. you can pick up hobbies just to do something that's a little bit different, get some fresh air and some sunshine, it's always a nice benefit for me. I enjoy games, board games, video games, anything that does like that. I enjoy role-playing games. I'm a big Dungeons and Dragons, Vampire the Masquerade, all those kind of games like that. I love that sort of creative bit. And it does somehow hybrid into voice acting and improv, so works well for me. Outside of that, I like to paint. I enjoy sculpture, doing art basis for things like that. I just do that for fun. But I also enjoy going out and doing things like fishing and camping, sometimes hiking. In Texas, it gets really hot here, so you got to pick your seasons.
Yeah.
But I enjoy going out into the wilderness and going on long walks and end up going swimming at lakes and things like that, just to kind of such a change of pace from being stuck in technology and in front of your desk. You know, anytime you can get the opposite in your life, it's always a benefit.
Right.
Outside of that, like nighttime, I like to, when things were normal, of course, pre-COVID, I'd always like to go check out maybe some local beer bar or something like that. I love myself some craft beers.
Yeah.
And going out to places like that, doing karaoke's a blast around here.
Yeah,
they have a lot of these spaces where you can rent rooms and with your friends and just record as many songs as you like over those hours. So as opposed to waiting your turn at a bar, which, you know, is fun. I remember last time I did that, it took 2.5 hours for me to sing one song just waiting in line. So I was like, I kind of prefer this in-room sort of way. I can be a ham as much as I want. Right. But yeah, I mean, I love doing that stuff. I love the social interaction of getting just on a cool night with some cool friends with a nice milk stout or something like that, and just be goofs. That's kind of my idea of fun.
Awesome, man. So if you were to write a letter right now, knowing that letter was being sent back to when you first pulled up that newspaper article about voiceover, what would you tell your past self?
I would tell my past self use your money more efficiently. There's always a lot of those avenues you take that think you lead you down a career path and you find yourself broke afterwards and you're like, well, I could have invested in a nice booth or right. something like that. I would also encourage myself to keep confidence in this. There were many times where it felt like things just aren't going to work and you weren't as good as everyone else. And as many times as you told yourself that this was going to be a career, you weren't working on it, you weren't changing, and you were never going to do it. Being confident in the opportunities that you have and to keep working towards them and know that as long as you continue to work on it and you work on getting better, opportunities will come. I would tell myself, especially in my early 20s, that don't give up on it too quickly. And then, of course, enjoy the journey while you have it. Because this career path can sometimes lead to hills and valleys of work and the kind of cool opportunities you have. And sometimes you're working so fast that you don't really get to enjoy things as much as you have in the moment. So it's learning to enjoy those cool things you do in the moment. In fact, like at one point I got to record for a Godzilla movie. You know, I got to dub a Godzilla movie, which was like a childhood dream. But at the time, you know, it was so fast paced and stuff that it didn't really click with me how cool that was. And then like year later, when the movie came out, it really put it into perspective. Like, you're in this movie, you're in a Godzilla movie.
Right.
And you know, I think I tell myself that anyway, now, if I could send a letter to myself 2 weeks ago, I would do the same thing. Enjoy it in the moment, because you never know how long it's going to last. And you sometimes forget how cool an opportunity is until it's all over. So yeah, those would be my two letters. It'd be very wordy.
Gotcha, man. Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. This has been a blast.
Yeah, man. I'm thanks for having me on. And, to all those out there who are looking to pursue voiceover full time like this, know that each path is going to be a little different. Don't give up on yourself, and be sure to reach out to me if you need a good demo. Wink.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to Travis's mindset on both navigating the industry of voiceover and keeping the excitement of voiceover all throughout your career. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the VoiceOver Coffee Shop. For more information on guests, new episodes, and more, be sure to visit www.vocoffeeshop.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.